We have Jake Kaufman and Jesse Seeley from CSP Industries live to talk about their feature-length animated VR musical experience, New Ren, The New Renaissance, now on Kickstarter. Tonight is February 22nd, 2015, in the Bobby Blackwell Show featuring Vert. He's here, and it's up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwell.
I'm not nervous at all. Don't look at me like that. Totally not nervous. Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. You're joining us live here on the Voice of Geeks Network over at VogNetwork.com. Welcome. Head on over to our chat room, live.VogNetwork.com. I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night, as well as questions for our guests that we're going to get to in just a minute. If you're also logged into the site, you can check in, play our little game where we have a leaderboard and stuff. You can check in and get points, just like Raginator and Fifth Dream. They were the first two to check in. Or if you're listening on the podcast feed somewhere tonight, you'll hear a very annoying break where a passphrase will be said, and you can log into the site and put that passphrase in on the site and get the exact same amount of points and go up on the leaderboard that way. We also are probably going to may take calls later tonight. Depends on how long the interview is going to go. Our Skype line is going to be Bobby Blackwell Show. That is all one word, or toll-free in North America, 1-888-36-GAME-1. Or you can contact me on my website, bobbyblackwolf.com. But I want to go ahead and get into this interview right now. You know them from games like Shovel Knight or DuckTales Remastered or Double Dragon Neon. They've been all around that scene, and now they're working on something that has to deal with virtual reality. And even, you know, you can, even if you have a monitor, you can enjoy this. It's called New Ren, The New Renaissance. And I've got Jake Kaufman, who's known as Vert, and Jesse Seeley. They are here to talk about it. So guys, welcome, and tell us, why does New Ren not suck?
Hey, Bobby. Simply put, it doesn't suck because it's the world's very first virtual reality rock opera.
Virtual reality rock opera. So tell us a little about what this actually is for people who probably don't get what that is.
Well, it's okay. Rather... Oh, go ahead. You go ahead, Jake.
Okay. It's basically a feature-length animated experience. And it's split up into 7 segments, and essentially you watch it either straight through or track by track. But the important thing is you look around with your mouse or with your Oculus Rift. It works equally well with both, and you can see crazy stuff flying at you from all angles and dancing robot girls and a super, super badass soundtrack, and it's all tied together in a way that nothing has ever done before.
So this reminds me a lot. There's, you know, if we're going to go like the old media route, I know you guys have compared this a little bit to Fantasia,
exactly,
by Disney.
Yeah.
But what I saw a lot of similarities in, or at least from what I'm reading, I don't know if you ever heard of Interstellar 5555.
Oh yes, it's very, very much so.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. by Daft Punk, and it's they basically sent their Discovery album to a bunch of anime artists and created this anime movie with an overarching storyline. But it used their album, and it was all music videos to their album. So it's kind of like that?
Yeah.
Yep, it's basically that in VR.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit. So there is, like, kind of an overarching story. What is this, what is this about?
Basically, it's a dystopian future. Humankind has been without music, creativity, art, stimulation for just what feels like eons. Robots have been made to keep everybody basically sedated. You don't have to care about anything because they care for you. You don't have to be afraid of anything because they protect you. You don't have to do anything because they serve you. So it's basically the price of peace for all mankind was to just unstimulate everybody and keep everybody neutral. And what happens is that our lovable malfunctioning robot ladies, QGK and Rix, they are the latest and greatest design. They're basically a prototype. And they malfunction because they're the first robots that have the ability to do to have facial expressions. And one of the side effects of that is that they start expressing. They start having emotion. And their voices go from being the standardly programmed monotone to suddenly they can sing. And because music has been outlawed for so long, that turns them into fugitives. They are on the run from this omnipresent government that's making sure nobody's stimulated and there's no art and creativity because they've learned to sing.
So are they ever going to be singing Everything is Awesome?
We can
possible.
Do that. We can do that as a sidetrack, yeah.
We could totally do a crossover if they want to get in touch with our people, you know. Not saying nothing. But yeah, basically they are fully fleshed out robots and they have brains. They can think. And that's a serious problem because they start thinking.
And feeling.
You know? Yeah, and feeling, and then singing and dancing. And then all hell breaks loose.
So they escape this creepy, bland city in the sky, basically, just by jumping straight off of it. And they plummet to the earth below, where it's like Burning Man. There are people down there who, while they don't have all the technological advances, they're still singing, they're dancing, they're living, they're creating. And yeah, they unwittingly lead a revolution to free all mankind. The people stuck in those unstimulated cities, they free all of mankind with the power of music.
So what type of music is going to be in this album?
You go ahead and take that one, Jake.
We are doing everything from early 80s and 90s industrial, all the way from like, you know, Front 242 stuff, all the way up to like Nine Inch Nails. We're also incorporating a whole lot of ambient stuff, Brian Eno, Bjork, Tangerine Dream, like basically all the things that, that Bobby, you know, personally have inspired me over the years and have inspired you too in this fantastic scene that we share. All this electronic stuff that's been out there, you know, the Orb and Orbital, all these amazing bands that have been doing crazy electronic stuff, they've all inspired me, and it's all coming together here.
Yeah, and you're also getting a whole bunch of other artists to do different tracks. You're having, so who have you lined up to do some of the different visuals?
Well, right now, we currently have Sarah Pocock, who she is an amazing animator. She currently works at Cartoon Network, and her most recent work was on Cosmos, the show, and that was really rad. She's incredible. We've also got Lindsay Collins, who, if you guys are Way Forward fans, you'd know her from her design for the April Fool joke, Cat Girl Without Salad. She designed that character. She's got a wonderful style. I can't wait to see her spin. We've got Angelica, also known as Charm Witch, who's currently a character designer for Shovel Knight over at Yacht Club. She's going to be putting her spin on it. We've got Max Hancock, who modeled the girls as you see them in the demo. That's his take. Michael Lambert, who worked on Cave Story 3DS and Binding of Isaac Rebirth. And and Pixel Seed, who I just got exposed to at MAGFest. I had never heard of him before and hadn't seen anything like what he does. Jake, you're so good at describing what Sean, also known as Pixel Seed, does. Go ahead and give him a taste.
He's a visualist, a VJ, and he projects stuff up on the screen behind performing artists. You know, if you've ever been to a show and you see those like glitched out visuals behind it, that's what he does. But he has this way of taking found footage and twisting it into like really dark places. Like, you know, old BBC archival footage and stuff like that. He's basically a video artist, you know, kind of like from the Big Lebowski. But he does crazy, crazy stuff, and we're going to have him up on, like, big view screens and projecting, like, all kinds of crazy, disastrous stuff all over buildings and stuff. It's going to be nuts.
And we also have more artists kind of waiting in the wings. We're in talks with a few more that we can't mention right now. But the ultimate goal is to have, even though the character designs and the feel and design of the world will remain the same, we're really excited to see just how each of these artistic teams put their heads together and throw a new spin, a new vibe, a new set of eyes on our concepts and on our designs.
It's basically going to be like the Animatrix. The same story is being told throughout, but it's totally different visual styles for each one.
That's cool. Now, if you're in chat, even though I know Vert's in chat as well, You can ask questions, and I'll read them on the air. Tiger Claw has this question. Does this game store, or does this story, he calls it a game, but does the story here have any parallels to what's happening in the real world?
Oh, yeah.
As much as anything does, really. it's not a direct commentary or anything. We're not trying to, like, make a political point, but, you know, there's a lot of talk lately. A lot of articles have been written, a lot of debates about futurists and, you know, the prediction that machines will take over and we'll all be without jobs. This is kind of an extreme version of that, but it's a little more lighthearted and entertainment heavy. Nugget, what are you doing? My dog's sitting on my lap right now. You know, it's not really meant to be a social commentary as much as it is an entertaining presentation.
Exactly, yeah.
Now Sky, who hosts Orange Lounge Radio, who comes on after me, he asks, is this like Footloose? How many degrees away from Kevin Bacon is this?
It's basically Footloose in space. I mean, more or less. Footloose meets Tron.
We love Tron here. So the other thing that this reminded me about, and this is also why I'm really excited personally about this, and Jake was like, he came on the call and he's like, I didn't realize this until about 2 minutes ago. This really reminds me of the PC demo scene because Jake and I both were in it back in the 90s.
We were so in it when we were kids.
Yes. It's what made me want to become a musician, and then I quit that path and became a programmer instead.
Yep, but a lot of people actually did, from especially in tracks. Mm-hmm. Like half of them became sysadmins. You're like a BSD guy now, right?
I was. Now I'm a developer. I left that job, so now I'm a developer for cloud computing.
Oh, cool
stuff. So,
awesome.
Yeah. A lot of the people that were in my scene with me. Mm-hmm. I'm telling Jesse this as much as anyone else because I haven't really talked about it much. They were programmers and musicians.
Yeah,
and that's why I have that sort of like technical bent mm-hmm. to me, where I can write code and. So I'm not unique in this sense. Like, a lot of us came out of that. And some of us went to music, and some of us went to programming.
Right.
Some of us went to system administration and, you know, data centers and stuff like that. But we all sort of have that, like, super nerd. You know, in order to write music in a hexadecimal spreadsheet,
yes.
You kind of have to have a little knack for technicality and code.
It's not intuitive. I still, to this day, have this is the old school nerd in me. I still have an old Pentium 166.
Uh-huh.
It still has MS-DOS 622. It still has my original Gravis ultrasound in it.
Uh-huh.
And all it runs are demos and Impulse Tracker. And I still write music in Impulse Tracker. In fact, the theme to this show was written in Impulse Tracker on that DOS box like 2 years ago.
Bobby, we are birds of a feather. I have the exact same setup, except it's a Pentium 2 333 and a Sound Blaster 64. Mm-hmm. But it still runs 622 and Impulse Tracker.
Yeah,
and nothing touches it, honestly.
No, and I mean, to be fair, also, like, the other side of me, I finally got a Roland MT32, so I have some Sierra games on there.
Nice.
So it's got the Roland and the Gravis in there. But I mean, and I can still go into Impulse Tracker, and I still remember all my keybinds.
Oh yeah, the muscle memory is forever because it took so damn long to learn it.
And I can't use anything. Like, what are you using now to write music?
Right now, I still use trackers all the time. For example, Shovel Knight was written in Famitracker, which is a tracker specific to the NES, much like Goat Tracker is for SIDS. Mm-hmm. So it's a specialized music tool for NES, but it has a tracker interface, kind of like Modplug. Mm-hmm. But primarily, I use Cubase and Ableton and Pro Tools, basically the standard DAW workstations.
So you figured out how to write music not in hexadecimal.
Weirdly enough, I actually started out with MIDI before I found the demo scene. Mm-hmm. Because I had a keyboard and I had sound blasters and stuff since I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. And my parents didn't let me get online until I was like 16. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't back in the old days when kids didn't have iPhones.
Right.
I finally convinced them to get me a modem, and I found the demo scene really quickly mm-hmm. thereafter. So I started out in MIDI, and I didn't even learn about mods until as a teenager.
So demos, for people who don't really know, when we talk about demos, we're talking about like in the 90s. These were people, they decided to take these old computers, which were like, you know, 286s, 386s, 486s, to their absolute limit. And it was all real-time graphics, and sometimes it was just, here's two cubes, and they're transparent, and you can see them rotate. You can see one rotate, and that was like mind blowing.
Yeah, if you actually knew why that was impossible, to see it actually being done in real time at like 30 frames a second or higher was like, you could not believe how they figured this out.
With the kick-ass music going on underneath.
Yeah, yeah, the kick-ass music. I mean, and lately in, like, for example, Farbrash demos, the music is all synthesized in real time. Mm-hmm. It's like 5 kilobytes of data, and it sounds like an electronic album. It's insanity what these guys can come up with.
I'm kind of new to the demo scene. Jake actually exposed me to it. I'd seen stuff before, but I didn't know what it was called. And am I right in thinking that basically you're typing out code, and when you put it in, it spits out music, right? And visuals.
Basically. I mean, that's one way to do it. You also have the spreadsheet program that simplifies it a little. And that's like saying we're simplifying neurosurgery.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome because, you know, the layperson might think, oh, math, you know, that's so technical and uncreative.
Right.
And that's really rad that a whole movement of people went and made math and programming and spreadsheets into an art form. I mean, that's really rad. That's awesome.
Yeah, our programmer, our main programmer, Cancel, a.k.a. Andrew, is the new generation of that. He's basically a math artist. He's doing ridiculous physical effects in, you know, all the light show stuff that you're seeing, the you know, the flashy colors and lights that you're seeing in the new Ren demo, that's all Andrew. And he made a whole system that triggers through MIDI. And so I can play those effects like an instrument. It's ridiculous, but he's basically a demo coder in spirit and in skill.
Like he was a demo coder born like too late?
Yeah, like a decade too late.
An old demo soul.
But we're pushing the limits. I mean, we're using Unreal Engine and we're using GPUs and stuff, which is, I guess, cheating. But we're pushing it to its absolute limit. We're cramming in everything we can into that 60 frames a second. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one of the things is, like, you know, in the old demo scene, you know, it was all about the effects, and they just string the effects together, and then eventually, like, they started, like, Future Crew started doing this, where they would actually tie it all together, and then as the years went on. But now, like, what are the challenges of doing a modern-day demo? Because you can't do, there's nothing that would really impress people anymore, because we have Xbox Ones, because we have PS4s. What's the challenge of doing a modern-day demo?
It's basically doing crazy lighting and material effects and geometry stuff. Like, there's still ways to impress people if the music hits just right at the time that some giant starburst comes out at you, and, like, there's lasers freaking everywhere, and you're moving through them at light speed. Like, it's still going to blow people's minds. You just have to really carefully engineer the intersection of music and visuals so that stuff just hits. Stuff just comes off at just the right time. We're doing it to that effect by having everything possible synchronized to music. If you watch the demo, you'll notice that the city itself pulsates and blinks and flashes, not just like a Winamp visualizer, but the kick drums and the snare drums and the bass lines are all controlling different things. So we can have all kinds of crazy stuff happening precisely timed for maximum impact.
And one of the things I'm impressed with, because I haven't really upgraded my video card yet. I'm actually waiting for the consumer version of the Rift before I really upgrade my video card. So it's about 4 or 5 years old. And most Unreal Engine 4 VR demos don't run that well. Like Sensapezo doesn't run all that well on my system. But the version that you guys put up on the Kickstarter demo, that actually ran pretty well.
Nice. Well, like I said, demo coder.
Yes.
Guy has all the low-level stuff. He tweaked the hell out of the Oculus. He basically has a custom bridge going between the Oculus driver and Unreal that gets rid of all the crap and makes it super, super fast and efficient. So I am so glad to have him on board.
Yeah, that sounds cool. And speaking of, like, you know, having the music go with the visuals, I know that you worked on this, and I wanted to bring this up because I have a Gear VR. And the version of Vanguard V on the Gear VR has your orchestral score in it.
It does.
And it's timed perfectly with, like, all the hits and the explosions and everything.
Yep.
And that totally changed the game. Because, I mean, I played it a whole bunch on the Oculus Rift where it had the original, like, the electro music.
Yes, the Rift version. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then I played on the Gear VR, and I was a little bit put, because I'm like, where's the thumping bass at the beginning? And then, like, halfway through, I had, like, this big grin on my face.
Yeah. It starts out kind of slow, and then it's like, an orchestra.
I get it. But it's all about that timing, the impact and the timing and everything.
Yeah, basically, the way I work with Justin, because we're so close, because we have this rapport built up, we know exactly what the other person's thinking. So he just gave me a video rendering of the final timing for the demo. And he said, it's not going to change. And I'm like, it's okay if it does a little bit. But I scored it like a movie. Mm-hmm. I brought the video into my workstation, and I scored it the same way you would score a film.
Right.
So I was able to hit every single time, every single mile, hit point exactly when I wanted to. And I love working on stuff that way because you never get to do that in games with background music that has to loop.
Yeah. So now here's a question that I have, because I've looked around and I've seen some of the reaction. And I'm jazzed for it, you're jazzed for it, because we grew up in the demo scene. Are you worried people aren't going to get it? Because I'm seeing a lot of people that are like, I don't like the robots. I don't like, are you worried that people aren't going to get what you're trying to do here?
Yep.
Of course, yeah. You can't please everybody, and that's just the risk that you take with any project where we're putting our vision out there. And of course there's going to be some people that don't get it, but what's wonderful, especially like you guys are talking about the demo scene and all that, the people that do get it, y'all are a passionate bunch, like just passionate. And that's going to be the fun part, is just getting the passionate people involved.
Yeah, I mean, beyond just not liking it, there are a lot of people who just see it and they don't understand what it is. They're like, what am I even looking at? What is this, a music? Is this an album with like music videos? Like, is it a game? Why can't I shoot things with a gun? Can you move around? Like that kind of stuff. And honestly, like we have to reach those people. So we're putting together a bunch of really large game streams with really well-known streamers. We're just going to get a ton of eyeballs on this thing, and hopefully a small percentage of those will be enough to push us over.
So this is a question I always ask, and it's not always something that people like to think about, because you're on Kickstarter right now.
Uh-huh.
What happens if it's not funded?
We do have a backup plan. We're going to get this done no matter what, and we've actually talked about that particular question before, and Jake had said, we're going to do this, but if we don't get backed, if we don't get supported, it's just going to take a long time, and we're just going to get to it when we can in both of our, busy professional lives.
I would say basically we're probably going to make the full album first.
Definitely make the album, yeah.
If we don't get funding to do the full project, because basically we just need to pay our artists and programmers. We're not taking cut of this personally, and we're not really putting much toward music production on our side, because I work at a studio. I get the buddy rate. It's not that expensive for us to make the music at all. Like a couple grand is all I need, and I can raise that myself. But to do the full animation and the full interactive experience, we definitely are going to need buku dollars. And so if we can't get those now, we're going to fall back, make the music, which is what we know how to do best.
Yes.
And then try again later once we have more to show.
And in the interest of full disclosure, I will say I have already backed this project.
Thank you.
When I got the Kickstarter version of the demo and saw how smooth it was, I'm like, here, I threw my money, or I threw my wallet at the screen, and then I picked it back up and went to Kickstarter and put in stuff. And in our chat room, Fifth Dream says this is the first Kickstarter I've backed in months.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So
basically, when a demo scener sees this, they know exactly what it is, and they're like, backed.
Because
there are only a few of us, you know? There aren't enough of us.
Because I remember, and it's like trying to explain it to some people, and like they looked at me weird. Because I don't know if you remember, we're going back into the demo scene talk. Trickster came out. He came out with a DVD, Mind Candy.
Yeah,
Volume 1. I've got it too.
I still wear the t-shirt all the time.
And I've got the Volume 1, and I've never watched the new school demo side, because it came with two discs. I've only watched the old school one.
Uh-huh.
And I actually did shed a tear, like, watching that stuff. I was like, I remember this so much.
We were little kids, and it was just, like, these crazy displays of technical acrobat moves and ninja skills. It was ridiculous. A lot of these programmers and artists ended up in the video game industry, working on all kinds of stuff. We're spread out a lot.
Yeah.
We've sort of been a a diaspora across the video game world.
I know a couple people like Future Mark when they did their 3D Mark that had some of the sceners in it, and I think Max Payne was made by some of the Future Crew guys.
It certainly was, but even in your average like big 200-300 person studio, there's going to be one or two people who are either on BBSs or on tracks or like, you know, we're all over the place. And we're generally regarded as the tech people, the guys you go to when you need, somebody to implement something.
So what were your favorite demos?
My favorite is still Second Reality. Right. I mean, I don't think there's any topping that. I liked everything the Black Lotus put out. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I feel like the culmination of all that tech was really embodied by Farbrush. When they started coming out with, you know, the product and all that stuff and doing ridiculous demos that fit in 64 kilobytes or 4 kilobytes, that's when I feel like we went pro with this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so any Farbrush demo is what I show to people first.
Right.
And then, like, the copper bars and spitting and meta balls and stuff like that, that's what I show later once people are really into it.
Yeah, mine were mostly, like, it was kind of funny, that Mind Candy, that track list was basically, like, my favorite demo list. So, like, EMF and Versus and Triton and Crystal Dreams 2. And
oh, God, Crystal Dreams 2!
Yeah!
Yes. Well, see, you and Jim are definitely on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
So it's no surprise that your favorite demos are similar.
Yeah. So if anybody else has any questions, live.vognetwork.com. I know we're wrapping up here. So Jake, I want to add, so actually what I want to do is, we didn't actually get into y'all's background. So both of you, tell me a little bit about your background and what you've done before.
I go first?
You go first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, guys. I'm Jessie Seeley, and you might know me best as the voice of Linda Lash in Double Dragon Neon, as well as the vocalist on Mango Tango's Neon Jungle. That's the level 2 City Streets song. I also performed the theme for Vanguard V, Turnaround. That's me. I did the end credit song on Blood Rain Betrayal, as well as voiced Blood Rain herself. And just basically, I've been partnered with Jake for a while, and it just made sense to both of us to take our combined love of music and everything in the industry that we've been involved in for so long and collaborate and make a project together. And also, just so you guys know, Rix and QGK are my design. I've also been a concept artist and character designer in the video gaming industry at WayForward for the past 5 or so years. And Rix and QGK are my design. They're my little babies.
So yeah. So you can sing and do art. I'm so jealous.
You guys can do math and make music, and I'm jealous because I hate math.
And I'm trying to learn art now, so that's the whole point. The new Renaissance is not a coincidental title. We all want to be Renaissance men and women.
Men and women, yep.
We definitely want to expand our skill sets.
Jacks and Danes of all trades.
Learn new things. So, so I am Jake Kaufman, also known as Vert. And I have been kicking around the PC demo scene and the chiptune scene and the video game fan arrangement scene for 15, 20 years now. Probably longer. Yeah, 20, at least 20 at this point. I broke into the video game industry in about 2003 or 4. And since then, I've done 70-plus video game soundtracks. I've worked most recently on Shovel Knight and DuckTales Remastered, mm-hmm. and Double Dragon Neon. So, like, childhood fantasies one by one coming true. I also did Contra 4 for the Nintendo DS. And so basically, I'm a fan who made it in the industry. And a hobbyist who made it into a profession.
Yeah, and I know we talked a lot about DuckTales Remastered. I especially, like, everybody called me a nerd because I'm like, he actually got the 15-8 part in the moon.
Oh, you got to. Anyone who doesn't do... Yeah, I remember you telling me about... You're like, yeah, the time signature's correct. And I'm like, yeah, it is.
Did you doubt me?
I am incredibly obsessive about details, technical details and music stuff. So when I sit down to write, it's gonna be... The room heats up and I start sweating like crazy. And it's chaos in my studio when I start working. I don't always get great results, but, you know, at least I try.
So what is your favorite genre of music or type of music to write?
That's the question I don't like to hear, because I don't have one. I like to write the genre of music that fits the thing being worked on by people that I love. Mm-hmm. If people are doing Shovel Knight, I'm going to write medieval chiptunes. If people are doing Contra, I'm going to be doing, like, 80s metal. Mm-hmm. If people are working on DuckTales, I'm going to do whimsical cartoon music. Yeah. And I'm going to enjoy all of them equally. Because it's the journey, not the destination for me.
Jesse, what are your favorite? What's your favorite genre to sing, and what's your favorite thing to draw?
Oh gosh, my favorite thing to draw. I default to four things. I either default to really cute ponies and foxes, like dewy-eyed, fluffy, and adorable, or I default to gut-wrenchingly gory zombies and twisted, mutilated, warty, toothy monsters. So my favorite things to draw kind of have a split personality. And as far as my favorite stuff to sing, I would have to say my favorite stuff to sing isn't necessarily about vocal acrobatics. You know, I'm not really into being like a Christina Aguilera, Mariah Carey, Whitney Houston. My favorite stuff to sing is strong, powerful, with lots of chances to just hold notes and blow out, and also stuff that you can move to and dance to, and that gets people charged and pumped. That's my favorite stuff personally to perform and sing. And to Jake's point of how he loves to compose Everything Under the Sun, that has been one of my favorite things about partnering with Jake and being called in to his instrumental arsenal so he can utilize me and my voice. It can be anything, you know. He might want something with a swing jazz flavor. He might want something that's more of a 90s anime theme song like Vanguard V was. It runs the gamut. It goes all over the place. So I know that whenever I'm working with Jake, it's not going to be vocally boring. And that's really wonderful.
So it's called New Ren, N-U-R-E-N, The New Renaissance. It's on Kickstarter right now. When does the Kickstarter end?
The Kickstarter ends in 21 days.
21 days.
21 days from right now.
We still have time to pull this off. It's not too late for a mid-campaign explosion. And we're planning that with all kinds of crazy stuff in the next week. There's going to be all kinds of streaming and YouTube stuff, and we have a very insanely special musical guest to announce tomorrow.
And it's not me, guys. Sorry.
Ah, it could be.
It might be. You'll have to tune in to find out.
It definitely is.
And then we go into a music break. We're actually going to play Broken Perfect.
Nice.
Which is the first track, I guess. It's going to be the opening track on the album.
Yep, it's the lead-off track, yep.
And it's available on the Kickstarter page, and also you can download the demo right now. You don't have to have an Oculus Rift. You can just play it on your monitor and move the mouse to look around.
We have optimizations in place for desktop mode, so you're not going to be disappointed. You're not just an also-ran. We have special camera stuff that's just for the desktop, so it's going to look beautiful.
So tell us a little bit about the song Broken Perfect. What's it about?
Gosh, Broken Perfect is really about the girls discovering their malfunction. Are they broken? Are they a broken, trashed piece of machinery because they're malfunctioning? Or is their malfunction actually making them beautiful and making them stronger and making them what they needed to be, what they were always meant to be? And if you listen to the lyrics, there is a link to the MP3 as well as the lyrics on the Kickstarter. If you listen to the lyrics, it is telling the story of them suddenly being on the run. And since they're being on the run and since they're being persecuted as fugitives, they're wondering, God, what's wrong with us? But there's nothing wrong with them. They were always meant to be broken and perfect.
All right. Well, thank you so much for spending your Sunday nights with me.
Of course.
Thank you for having us.
And good luck. And everybody go back it on Kickstarter. So have a good rest of your night, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. You have a wonderful night.
So we're going to be playing Broken Perfect from New Ren. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show here on the Voice Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com.
Away. If you want some cake, listen to the Bobby Black Wolf Show.
You think GLaDOS would dance? Does she want? Because she's perfect. That robot's perfect. Would that robot dance in the new Renaissance? Welcome back. If you want to leave a bumper, you don't have to be GLaDOS, or you don't have to be broken or perfect or a robot. All you got to do is send an MP3 with just your voice to bumpers@bobbyblackwolf.com, or you can leave me a voicemail on the toll-free number. So we have a little bit of time, about 10 minutes, so I'm going to go ahead and open up the phones. Bobby Black will show on Skype 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free in North America. You can talk about anything going on in the gaming industry. I know the big topic in gaming this week that people are talking about is The Order 1886. And a lot of people are upset about the length of the game, which is a very valid concern. If you're going to pay $60 for a product about a game that theoretically is only 5 hours long, because YouTube leaked, I think from Korea or something, that showed the entire game in 5 hours. So everybody thinks, oh, it's a 5 hour game. And what was kind of interesting is on Friday when it came out, I went over to Twitch, where everybody was thanking everybody for following and stuff like that. And, you know, I was kind of watching to see, because they were all saying, I'm going to beat it in 5 hours. I'm going to prove that it's 5 hours. All these streamers, right? And they go through, and I actually watched the ending a couple times. I wound up hitting a couple of these streams right as they were ending at the ending scene. So I know how it ends. I spoiled myself on The Order 1886. And each one of them was like, yeah, that took me, you know, it's still not a long time. But it's not 5 hours. They're like, oh, that took me 7.5 hours. Or one person, it was almost 9 hours. That's how long it took them. So I think what it is you can speed run the game in 5 hours. But that's not typically your first playthrough. And you can speed run Ocarina of Time in like an hour. And does that diminish the value of that game? No. But I mean, now, 7.5 hours for something that has no multiplayer, no co-op, no nothing but the story, that's a little bit much for $60. But then again, you got to realize the visuals are beautiful. Kind of like how Rise on Xbox One looked great. That's the Order 1886 looks great. It's very beautiful, and that's kind of what you're paying for, because those type of visuals cost a lot of money. So I can see that, you know, it's very valid to wait for the price drop, or wait for a Game of the Year edition, because they are releasing DLC for it. But, you know, it's not 5 hours. It's an 8 hour game, which is still kind of tough to swallow for $60. As for the game itself, the when I would watch those streamers, which I'm assuming they are not paid, I don't know. Sony doesn't have a creators program. They were saying that, you know, it's a mediocre cover shooter. It has some cool guns, and then they take those guns away from you, so you never get them again. And there's a lot of QuickTime events in it, which everybody's like, oh my god, too many QuickTime events. And I'm like, isn't this the same crowd that wants a new Shenmue? Dungeon Buster points out the main quest in Skyrim can probably be finished in less than 10 or so hours if you did nothing else. But see, at least Skyrim gives you the option. And The Order 1886 does not give you the option. And people had this problem with Final Fantasy 13, where you were on the... Now, Final Fantasy 13, it was a much longer hallway, but it's, you know, it was still a hallway. We do have a call here on the line. Bobby Black will show you are on the air. Who is this?
Hi, this is Raginator.
Raginator, what's up, man?
Not a whole lot. Since you were on the topic of the Order 1886, comment on the whole length of the game controversy. The way I look at it, it can be either a good thing or a bad thing, if a game is short. Mm-hmm. It all depends on your point of view. On one hand, if you're someone that's in my situation where you don't have a whole lot of money and you got ample free time and not a whole lot of responsibilities, it could be a bad thing if you want to get the most bang for your buck. However, on the flip side of the coin, let's say you get a busy career or you're stay-home parents, you got this, that, and the other, and going on for you. That being said, you may not necessarily have a whole lot of time in a different day or a different week for gaming. So the shorter the game, the more likely you're going to see the end of the game.
Right.
Therefore, you're more likely to see the end of the Order 1886 versus, say, Skyrim.
Right.
So in that sense, a game being short is actually a good thing. So,
yeah.
Like I said, it all depends on your personal point of view. So.
Yeah, and it's basically what you got to realize, think about, is, how do you determine value in something? And I mean, we can use art as an idea here. You know, is length of time the only value of the art? Because, like, if for paintings, let's say, does a painting have more value the larger it is? The Mona Lisa is actually a really small painting, but people would say that the original Mona Lisa is very valuable, even though it's not that big. And so the thing is, do you consider the great graphics and the story and the setting enough value for $60, even though it's only a 7, 8, or 9 hour experience?
Yeah, and another thing to take into consideration is that at the end of the day, now whether a game is long or short, if you could ask yourself if a given game was fun, and you can honestly answer that question with a resounding yes, then yes, the game is worth the $60 or so that you paid for. Or $90 if you got a collector's edition or however much you pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's basically, it's just, how do you value your money? And, people exactly. will go pay $15 to go watch a two-hour movie, but won't pay $60 for a seven-hour game. So
exactly. All right, well, thanks for taking my call. It's definitely appreciated.
Thank you.
Have a nice night.
To register participation for this week's episode of the Bobby Blackwolf Show on VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase clerk. And also, this has also been recorded afterwards. Before we get into the OLR call, which is next, you're going to hear some references about, we'll be back next week. And you'll notice this episode was actually posted pretty late. It's actually Saturday night, the following Saturday night. And there is not going to be a live show on Sunday night, March 1st. Just like there's not going to be one because of PAX East. And it's actually for a medical reason. I announced this on Facebook and Twitter today, but I'm going to put it here as well, just in case you're listening to this and wondering where the next episode is. Unfortunately, I was starting, when this episode was being recorded, I was starting to have a cold, and it turned out to be a really bad one. And Monday night, I actually received an ear infection in both ears. So wearing headphones is not a priority right now. I actually have lost the majority of my hearing temporarily. It should be back pretty soon. I'm on antibiotics. I've seen a doctor and all that stuff. Being able to do the show tomorrow night is not going to be able to happen. So I'm not going to be doing a show. But hopefully, I'm still going to PAX East. With or without antibiotics. So if you're going up to Boston, I will be up there. Luckily, I'm not working. I'm just going as a fan. So I don't have to try to listen to people if I still haven't regained my hearing by then. But hopefully I'll see you then. But I'll be fine. March 15th will be the next live show. We'll talk all about GDC and PAX and all the VR announcements that are going to come out from all the new players. And, if there's going to be a new Rock Band or Guitar Hero announced at PAX. All that's going to be taking place there on March 15th, so I will see you then. Now we're going to get back into the OLR call, and remember that afterwards I will say we'll be back next week, because I didn't know last week that I shouldn't medically do a show this week. We're going to go ahead and move on to the next thing. Coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com is Orisons Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do. And they probably have more to say on this topic. So we like to check in with them. Sacramento, are you guys there?
We are here, Bobby. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm feeling good. Tonight just made my week.
Yeah, I was thinking when you and Vert were talking about all those things you guys had in common, I was like, oh my gosh, Bobby's gonna have a swelled ego. I'm gonna have to deal with a PAX East in a few weeks.
That's right.
your chat room was very interesting for a little bit of time with various pseudonyms.
Yeah, Jamie walked in. She's like, why does everybody in chat have names named somewhat adult things? I was like, I think it's something that was said on air. I got distracted for a little bit, in all honesty, because as you know, Studio OLR fills up in the 5 o'clock hour here while you're going.
So you backed New Ren?
I did. I figured the reward tiers were really low and I think reasonable. It was $15 for the experience and the soundtrack. And, not to swell egos even more here, but it's deserved. I know that Vert and company will put out a quality soundtrack, if nothing else. Like, I could hate the experience, and based on what I'm hearing, I won't. But I'm just saying, I could hate that, and the soundtrack alone would be worth it. So I'm on board.
Yeah. So the other topic I kind of talked about a little bit was the Order 1886, and I kind of threw out this thing about value.
Yeah.
I used kind of like paintings as an example. You know, the Mona Lisa is a very small painting, yet people have a lot of value in it.
That's
Can
true.
You still have a lot of value in a game that's only 7 or 8 hours?
I think, yes, you can. I'm just not sure, from what I'm hearing, if the Order is it. Mm-hmm. I think is where the problem really lies, is that the Order is being used to frame this great debate about can a game that's only 7 or 8 hours long be worth $60? And I would argue people pay $60 for a lot of stuff that's even shorter. Concert tickets would be an excellent example. Sports tickets.
Books that I've read entire trilogies of in one night.
Right? Or, I just even read an article today. The price for Disneyland for a day, one park, going up to $99, right? So, you know, people are willing to pay a premium for experiences. And are there games out there that are worth $60 for a 5 to 8 hour experience? Yeah, probably.
I agree with you. There are probably games out there that are worth the $60 that are short like that. The Order, unfortunately, is not one of them.
Yeah, I think that's the issue. And it's hard for me to say that because I haven't played the game myself. And so in full disclosure, I have not played the game myself. I'm only saying this based off of what other people are saying about the game, and what I'm picking up on is that it's gorgeous to look at. It's a very graphically beautiful game, but it kind of feels like a game – like it doesn't really – feel unlike a game we haven't played before.
But my question is, though, what's their DLC look like? Are they going to be like putting out like a season pass with like a bunch of expansions and stuff like that? Because then that's my thing. It's like, well, you had all the, you could be, you know, you could spend a little bit more time on content, and you know,
well, just, this was already delayed.
Yeah, and that's where people will get really upset if that ends up being
well,
the case.
Well, also, DLC. Look at the last few Sony games that have come out that have been kind of, I mean, Drive Club. Hello, that was delayed like crazy, and it still was kind of buggy when it came out.
I'm still waiting on my PS Plus edition of that.
Yeah, still waiting for that. And then
no pressure whatsoever on Uncharted 4 at this point.
That I have a little bit more faith in. I mean, hopefully, but
well, Naughty Dog rarely disappoints, if ever. I'm like trying to think if they have disappointed in the last few years, and I don't think they have. So it's going to be the bar is set very high for that game for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, from what I've understood, like the gameplay, like the reason it took that you could speed run it only in 5 hours is because you can't skip the cutscenes, and apparently there's not enough gameplay between. Like it's probably got more cutscenes than Metal Gear Solid is what some people were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Metal Gear Solid was like 5 times as much game, wasn't it?
Yeah,
yeah,
but like the ratio, I guess, of cutscenes to gameplay.
Something people can't forget, though, is that games of the AAA nature that come out from these big publishers for systems like PlayStation 4, you know, as the systems get better and better and better, to make these experiences with the graphics and the technical elements that are up to those, you know, that same level that really push the standards of the system, that takes more people to do. I think sometimes we forget that a lot of Atari 2600 games could be made by one person.
Who cares? Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing is, why do I care that you spent all this time to make this game look more like a movie, but it has no replayability to it versus, you know, a game that may not look as good, but it's going to be played for a long time. I just...
Because there are, unfortunately, people out there who will not play a game or buy a game that doesn't look as good as they want.
Well, and just, you know, to make sure I'm complete in my thought here, what I'm with is that I'm not saying you can't make a great PlayStation 4 game with only one person, because we have a lot of great indie titles that are from very small studios and so forth that bring a lot of new ideas to the table. It's just that a lot of times, A, these games are cheaper because they're usually on the digital front, so maybe $20 maximum, right? B, a lot of times these things tend to be a little more replayable. They bring something new to the table in regards to mechanics or game functionality or what have you. Basically, I'm saying is the indies are rising up right now, and it's very, very, very fascinating to watch.
Well, but you see, and also you got to look at it from the flip side, you know, because there are people that do play like the PS4 and the Xbox One, and they kind of want to see less indie stuff. They want the big spectacular releases. They want the amazing graphics. They want AAA titles, and they're actually kind of pushing back. You kind of see it. It's a tiny minority, but they're saying, you know, stop with all this indie stuff. Give me, you know, the big budget stuff. I want the big budget games.
They are
4K no los dos.
No, but that's the thing, is they are doing that. The problem is now they're making a lot less, you know, fringe stuff, and so they're focusing on less titles that are of better quality. But that means that you're going to see the, you know, big gaps in the releases. Mm-hmm. You're only going to see maybe one big title a year from, you know, Sony or, you know, Microsoft or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, you know, where you used to get, like, you know, Activision would have, like, a few titles coming out in a year that would be okay. I mean, like, you know, prototypes or something like that. But a lot of the extra stuff just didn't work out that well. And so instead of putting out a bunch of different licensed properties or new IPs and stuff like that, they're just going to stick to what works for them and put that out, you know, every year, or just, you know, kind of dial it down to one or two big titles a year.
Not every game can be Dragon Age Inquisition, just saying.
But we want every game to be Dragon Age Inquisition.
Well, it's certainly, I mean, when you put The Order next to Dragon Age, I think that's a game that a lot of people are pointing at going, that's $60 and that's, you know, 80 hours.
Or $35.99.
I paid $75 for the deluxe edition
mm-hmm.
of Dragon Age Inquisition. It mm-hmm. was my new hire present.
Mm-hmm.
And I put 120 hours into my first playthrough. My first playthrough. So, just saying.
Yeah. Put a dollar sign in front of the 1886 and we'll talk.
Yeah, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. That's the other big thing to take away from this, unfortunately.
So, speaking of playing games, since I have 3 minutes and I just want to hear Rob's reaction, when are you playing my Vogue Jam game?
I really, really want to get it done before PAX East, so I'm really hoping in the next couple weeks. Just, you know, the cards and stars have not aligned for that to happen yet, because I have to make sure I have my space available and so forth. I want to give everything my full attention. Your games deserve nothing but the best, so when that all lines up, I'll make sure that happens. Hopefully no later than PAX East. That's really what I want to do, because I want to do them all.
But there, you have been doing a lot of stuff, and I haven't touched on it on our show, but you've been doing a lot of forum posts
as
discussion topics, which are kind of neat, and we're actually getting some discussion on the forums, which, you know, you'd think in 2015 forums are dead. Well, ours aren't dead.
Well, not all of them are dead. I think forums are still, you know, a place for people to, like-minded people to kind of collaborate a little bit. I know Jamie talks about forums for a lot of some of the fans things she does. You know, everybody knows, like, NeoGAF and some of the big gaming ones, for better or for worse. And I think we have a lot of really cool, like-minded people here at Vogue that all kind of subscribe to the idea of, we enjoy games, but we don't have to be jerks about it. And so,
yes, we do.
You know, well, and a lot of people that have tuned into OLR, like, live or Bobby live, you know, sometimes they get into debates in the chat room and they're going at it, but they kind of walk away from that going, you know, yeah, I disagreed with somebody, but it was, like, really respectful and I felt like I learned something. And I'm like, that just like that, I'm paying the bill for another year because that justifies everything.
Instead of
here.
Like on Twitter where it's like, yeah, I disagree with you, I'm going to SWAT you now.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. I'm so against that culture, and I'm glad we have something that's better here at Vogue for folks that are subscribing to the idea of not being a jerk to each other.
So what else are you guys going to be talking about tonight?
Well, I feel like it's our art night at Vogue. It's artistic night, because obviously you had an art project of the future that you were talking about on your show, and which totally sold me with the Footloose Cross Tron talk. But tonight we're actually going to be welcoming.
That would make for a weird movie.
That's you should have heard what we were talking about earlier. But anyway, So on tonight's show, you've heard Dark Sakura talking about this over the past couple weeks, is that she had a teacher when she was going to school that created this game that's available on iPhone and iPad called Flom. So we actually have Steve, the creator of the game, is here in studio with us tonight. And Flom is a little more inspired by things from the past, like everything from like classic art, but there's a little bit of modern art in it as well, in a classic inspired game. So I feel like we're running the whole gauntlet here at Vogue tonight. So
I use the allure of chimichangas.
So we'll talk more about Flom here in a little bit at OLR.
You're going to get culture tonight on Vogue,
right?
Yogurt. Yeah. Orange Radio is up next. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you as always, Bobby.
So that's it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network at VogueNetwork.com. Catch us live and interact with the show directly. We will not have a show, I'm pretty sure it's the following Sunday, because I will be getting back from Boston. So we will not have a live show then, but we will be here next week. And if you're going to be in PAX East, we actually have a thread on our forums to talk about what we may do is a Vogue meetup. We are not attending as media. We are attending as regular people, thanks to a listener who had some extra badges that was willing to sell it to us at face value. So thank you very much, Hitstun, for that. So if you want to meet up with us there, you can either on the forums or just, you know, hit us up on Twitter when we're in Boston tunneling through the snow. You can leave me a voicemail on any topic or leave a bumper if you're in the show on the toll-free number 1-888-36-GAME-1, or you can email me an MP3 to bumpers@BobbyBlackWolf.com. You can join the Facebook fan page at Facebook.com/BobbyBlackWolf or on Twitter at Bobby Blackwolf, and you can submit questions on my website, BobbyBlackWolf.com. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who doesn't know about it yet. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters. So thank you very much, Loki, Dark Sakura, Dark Tetsuya, DC Nate, Hecht, Ronma, Sky, VXJSNXV, Doomplague, Fifth Dream, Havoc978, Shadow Nexion, Alan Alchemy, Aspen, Bacon Bits, Bird, DeBlueGuy, Dungeon Buster, MXT, Eric K., eSWAT, Havoc978, Hitstun, Ikuma JP, Kazan, Matt Q, Monster B, MXC, Orange Wright, Raginator, Breakman, Sebastian, Skinslip, SJ1 Undermat, The Rob D, Tiger Claw, Telegak, True, William Murderface, Zappy, and Zether. So, New Ren is awesome. The old demo scene is great, if you can appreciate it. And, yeah, Raginator and Breakman tried to get me to read stuff I wasn't going to read, and they didn't catch me. See you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the Vogue Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.